One of my favorite movies ever just happens to be Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Surprise, surprise, right? Well, there's a line in that movie that goes something like, "He who makes a beast of himself gets rid of the pain of being a man." Very fitting for the Vegas piece of my timeline, because all I was ever trying to do was run from what I was supposed to be. Instead, I chose to adhere to another quote that stayed with me for so damn long. It's better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war. You see, I've never allowed myself to feel, nor even that I deserved success in any way. Not then, not still. Now I know, of course, today, I mean, each quote represents being everything you can be, right? Smart, cunning, able, unafraid, unapologetic for doing what's right and allowing yourself to be an absolute beast. But being able to control that rage. And while I lived up to much of that, it was applied so haphazardly that it was well off the mark of the sentiment. You see, where I was, both mentally and physically at this time, was scary. Unlike anything you or I could have ever imagined. And hindsight has taught me that no matter how scary Vegas was, there was something far worse brewing. Let's get into it. My name is Jason Farias, and this is my Madness Method. If betrayal was forgivable, then Lucifer would still be sitting at God's side. Loyalty is not negotiable. It's a good quote, right? Pretty ominous way to start off the story, but I sat back a few days back and I was gonna start recording this episode, and I got a few minutes in and it dawned on me that I had not processed this thing I'm about to tell you about, okay? And so I had to stop. I deleted it. I wiped it clean and I just sat back and I started taking in the gravity of what it is that's happened here. It had always been a story I told, right? But in this point in my life, this time in Vegas, even the worst of things I had to put out of my mind. I couldn't dwell on it. I don't know if it's because I couldn't take on anymore or because, hey, dude, I know nothing. I saw nothing. I don't talk about nothing. My name's Bennett and I ain't in it. You know what I mean? And in this thought process, it got me thinking about how many times I had heard somebody in the dope game, "Oh, Jay, I got your back, man. I got your back, dude. I got you." Whatever it was, you know what I mean? Like fucking, "Oh, I'm having some problems. I got your back." You know, Hero never once said, "Jay, I got your back." Hero never once said, "Jay, call me if there's a problem." But when I did, he showed up. Okay. But I can think back to times people I grew up with, people that like knew me from way back. "Oh, Jay, I got you." But they fucking turned on me in a dime. Fucking Chris turned on me for a bitch. Excuse me. He turned on me for his girlfriend. It wasn't his girlfriend, man. She was a problem. Right. So I had other friends that turned on me just because they didn't like who I'd become when I begged them for help and they turned on me. And I can even tie that to business. You know, and I tell people, if you have to tell somebody that you're in charge or that you're the leader, then you are neither in charge nor the leader. You should not have to say it. Okay. If you have to tell people that you're the one to listen to, then there's somebody else pulling the strings. And it's the same shit, same but different, right? But in the dope game, I feel like people that need to announce how down they are or fucking how gangster they are when they got to talk about it, that's them posturing. It's not real. It's not real. It's them posturing and it's them trying to make themselves feel good. It ain't got nothing to do with you and they're not going to be there. And I've experienced this time and time again in my recovery, in my life, in my friendships. Like, I have very few friends now. And it's not because I don't want friends, it's because only very few have shown me true loyalty. They've gone above and beyond and not once said, you know, I got you. But they repeatedly show me. And that's what I need. I don't need words. I need actions. It's why it's very fitting that this was the mindset I went into, because in my processing of what happened next, it's very relevant. Duck and I were at this guy Ronnie's house and hanging out as we always do. You know, we didn't have anywhere else to be, and you know, it was kind of home base for us. You know, Duck was now homeless. I mean, he'd go back and forth to his cousin's house, but clearly I wasn't going there. You know, that's where he would go to sleep it off or whatever. But he and I were homeless together. Duck was known, you don't fuck with Duck. Like, he's known in the streets. Okay. And then here I come around, he and I click up, we have our beef. And the fact that I didn't back down from him really fucked with people. Okay. And the fact that the beef got squashed and he and I were now clicked up and stronger than ever, we were problematic. So we had to stay fluid. You know, we had to stay here, we had to stay there. And Ronnie's was a cool spot to just land every now and then. And it might have been a Saturday. I honestly don't remember. The days all fucking run together when you never sleep. But it was time to go pick up. You know, we had our money. He had sold what he needed. I sold what I needed. Like, it was time to go read cop, go see Juan. You know what I mean? Let's go see what's up. And so I make the call. You know, Juan, as usual, 15 minutes. 15 minutes in a dope game means fucking 2 hours. Okay. So we came up with a place we were going to meet. And this dude, Jeremy, that was kind of always hung around, like, he used to run around with that dude, Danny Boy. And yes, after you hear this story, you're going to be like, hey, stupid, it was right in front of you. So we make the call. Juan tells us, you know, whichever Juan I was on the phone with tells us where to meet at and how long. And we're like, yo, Jeremy, fucking give us a ride. And here's the thing about Jeremy. Jeremy had a car. It was this old fucked up, like 89-ish Jeep Grand Cherokee. It was used to be white, all faded and shit. No tint on the windows, like super stock, right? But hey, I didn't have to walk. And the thing about this dude is, if you just got done getting this guy high, okay, we'd be geeked out, like fucking unable to fucking stop vibrating. And if you then said, hey, Jeremy, let me get a ride, he'd be like, oh, give me high. I'm like, what the fuck, bro? Like, we just got you high. And he's like, oh, that's different, you know? So, I mean, lesson learned, I should have got him high after I asked instead of before and then asked. But anyway, so he agrees. And, you know, we drag our feet because, you know, we know the waiting game. We know where we're going. And when you're going to pick up, you don't want to go park somewhere and just sit, right? Very obvious. Okay. Well, some fucking tweakers are sitting in this car in this parking lot, and they've been there for 45 minutes. Wonder what they're doing. In an effort to try to control the optics of it, we'd wait. You know, sometimes we'd even make one wait, and sometimes he wouldn't, and those days would suck. But we get in this guy's Jeep, or we're going to get in this guy's Jeep anyway. Fucking Jeremy goes, but don't be bringing fucking guns with you guys. I know how you two fuckers are. You know, like, he was like, I just got my license back. This thing's fucking, if we get pulled over, I'm good. But if I have you two in the car and you guys got guns, we're all going to jail. And I was like, and I look over at Duck, and Duck kind of gives me the, it's all good, dude. And I was like, all right, no problem. So, you know, I throw my gun over to fucking Ronnie, and Ronnie fucking puts it away because, you know, he don't give a shit. And we get in the car, and Duck gets in the front passenger. And anytime we went anywhere, I would prefer to be in the back seat, sitting in the middle. I don't really have a reason why right now. Like, maybe it was the conditioning from the thing that happened with Hero and then putting me in the middle. There was like a safety cocoon that I felt existed in the back seat in the middle. So anytime I went anywhere with anybody, you know, assuming it was more than just me and that person, I'd be in the back seat in the middle. And we get in this dude's Jeep, and we start heading down Tropicana towards the strip. And we're cruising along, and he's like rolling super slow. And we're like, what the fuck, bro? Like, you ain't got no beat. It's hot as fuck. Your air conditioner don't work. Like, let's get this shit. What are you doing? Let's go. And he's like, oh, it's all good, dude. Fucking calm down. We pull up to the stoplight, and the light's red, and he gets in the left turn lane, and we're sitting there. to make a left on Valley View. And all of a sudden, the back driver window just explodes. And the next thing you know, all you hear is gunshots and bullets hitting this car. Ding, ding, ding. I'm telling you right now, the sound of a bullet hitting a car is some shit you will never forget. But I wasted, nor did Duck, we wasted zero time, zero, jumping out of this car. The driver's side window broke. We're out the passenger in a heartbeat. I throw the door open. I throw myself out of the car. Duck throws himself out of the car. This fucking dude, Jeremy, just guns it and takes off. Okay. He hangs that left and he's gone. In the process, as he's driving away, because of the way Duck threw himself out the car, his foot was left and the dude ran over his toes. So as Duck is getting up to run, he gets his foot ran over. And it wasn't like, oh, I broke my foot, but nonetheless, he got his toes ran over. So his stride to run, he's now on the ground. And I'm like scurrying on the ground, getting around the car that's next to us. And the car that's next to us, I noticed there's kids in this car. Now, looking back on this, it was a very defining moment. You see, a lot of people can say what they would do. Oh, if I was in that situation, I'd have done this. Yeah, I mean, you'd like to believe that, right? But in this instance, Duck and I were forced to prove what we would do. I knew that Duck didn't put his strap away. And I always knew that Duck carried a sawed-off. And I mean, this motherfucker was cut down. I mean, you couldn't take less off of a gun and still call it a gun. But it was enough. He had five shells in it. And because he was on the ground, and all I remember is a white car. I don't remember what kind of car. I don't remember none of that shit. I knew I was trying to save my own life because, one, I was told, don't bring your fucking gun. And another, now that we could have hid behind the Cherokee, but that motherfucker was gone too. And I just remember looking over, and I don't know if Duck fired in the air or if he fired at the car that was firing us. I have no idea where these bullets were coming from. I wasn't going to turn around to look, right? Like I couldn't fire back. But I remember seeing the look on this woman's face, and her window was down. And I was like, lady, you gotta go. You gotta run this light. Go, go, go. And I'm screaming at her. And I'm reaching in the window and pushing the kids' heads down. And I'm like, run the fucking light. And like she was froze. And one more time I screamed, go. And poof, off she goes. Problem is now, I again am exposed for a hot second anyway. Because when she went, every fucking car behind her went. Nobody was waiting for a light anymore. But nor should they have. But in this Frogger situation that Duck and I were in, we lost track. Like he wound up 30 yards away from me because we're scrambling between cars and ducking because this car that's going the opposite direction. See, these are the things that I had to work through to try to understand because in the moment it was survival. But how did these people know where to be? Why was this dude driving so slow? The fact that oncoming traffic stopped next to us to shoot at us tells me that they weren't following us. They were waiting or meeting us. And now we've got cars fucking zooming by and I'm scrambling and I'm turning and I must have looked like a fucking spaz because I'm trying to get to Duck so that, so we stay together. But the traffic and us weaving in and out of this traffic, you got to figure, I believe Tropicana was a three-lane road, then the turn lane. So you're talking four lanes of traffic we're dancing around in. And these guys are still fucking kicking off shots. It felt like 100 fucking shots. It was probably not. But this car sat for what felt like ever shooting at us. And all I remember is Duck pointing his gun towards the air because I think he was just doing it to like return fire and make the firing stop. Like, I don't know that he knew exactly where this was coming from because the cars were zooming by. We had no clear view of what this vehicle was, but I knew that that thing wasn't firing anymore. So what? There's five shots in a gauge, right? He was out. There was nothing left to do. We were just stranded in the middle of this road with cars going one way and a car facing the opposite direction shooting at us. And the last thing that that man said to me, the last thing Duck said to me was, "Jay, you good?" I said, "Yup." With all the confidence in the world, "Yup." And we ran. We ran. The car fucking, I remember the car fucking skirted going west on Trop. Gone. But I don't know. Is there more cars? Like, I don't know. But what I knew is Duck ran to the sidewalk and then up towards the apartments. I even think that might have been where the budget suites were. Maybe he weaved through there. I don't know. We didn't stick together. But I'm telling you right now, I ain't never ran that fast in my life. And it had to have been 100 and fucking God knows what that day. But I ran as fast as I could. At least that's what I felt. I mean, my adrenaline, telling you this now, my heart's like, I have boys, dude. I can't fucking imagine them going through this. My poor mother, you know, like looking back, man. But I knew that this car was on Trop. And when you go down Tropicana and you're heading west, there's this big ass chunk of land. And I think I've mentioned it before. It's like a hole in the earth. Okay. It's probably big enough, if you could imagine, maybe to put like a nine-hole golf course. Like, it's big, right? But it's not flat. It was almost looked like it was a deep hole. And this is where they dumped like construction refuse, like concrete and dirt, and there was just mounds everywhere, and it had become somewhere that people go dirt bike riding and all that shit. And I was like, I'm gonna cut through this place. And I was probably halfway through running up and down these fucking dirt mounds, and they were big. They were, you know, 10, 15 feet up, down, up. Like, it was wild. And I just remember as I'm running through this fucking place, I'd heard stories, dude. I'd heard stories that there was a car buried in there with people in it. I had heard that's where people get buried when they get dealt with. And here I am, having just been shot at, running through, like, hey, fuck, let me make it easier on you guys. I'm where I need to be, and no way to defend myself. Clearly nothing happened there, right? I got the, but anyway, I get back to fucking Ronnie's place. And him and Jamie, his girl, were there. And by this time, this guy Benny and his girl Heather had gotten there. Again, just some tertiary people that might come up later. But I show up and they're, what the fuck, dude? Like, first of all, they knew like I hated sweating. Like, I didn't run anywhere. Like, I mean, I was a Cali boy, you know what I mean? Like, I was just a pretty boy. But I showed up drenched in sweat and I could tell something was wrong, clearly. And I started explaining everything that happened between me and Duck and fucking, where the fuck is Jeremy? And, you know, they're like, I don't know, you didn't come back here. And I was, so I, out of sight, out of mind. Okay, he was kind of a chicken shit, you know, squirrely dude, whatever, he ran. And I paid that no more mind. But as I'm telling him the story, fucking Ronnie gets up, goes into the house, and I'm like, I'm mid-story. He goes, keep talking, I'm listening. And he fucking goes in the house, and he comes out, and I shit you not, dude, this guy's got an armful of fucking guns. I mean, he's got a little duffel bag over his arm, and I don't know what he had in it, but he was ready to handle fucking business. Jeremy's nowhere to be found. Jamie gets out of the way. Jamie was Ronnie's girl. She was a cool down ass bitch. Like, she was like, go get him, babe, you know, and thought fucking nothing of it. And Benny and Heather, they didn't even like acknowledge the story I just told them. They just sat back and they were like, oh, we're gonna get high. You got any shit? They fucking asked me if I had shit. They asked me if I had dope. That was their fucking concern. Not that we need to go fucking find Duck because he might be fucking caught up. Not that. So we get in Ronnie's fucking, I think it was like this old blue Corsica. It was a bucket. Okay. But we get in this car. We've hooked that left out of the trailer park and we're smashing down Tropicana. I don't know, from the trailer park to Valley View ain't that far, but it felt like that ride was forever. And a little side note, whenever you rode somewhere with fucking Ronnie, if that dude wanted to make a left turn and there was traffic stopped in front of him, but there was an open oncoming lane, he would drive in that. Even though there's cars fucking still coming at us, and I'm telling you right now, this motherfucker was driving on the wrong side of the road, getting on Tropicana. Okay, and we're talking 2:30 in the afternoon, and he's driving with his knee, fucking loading guns. And I'm over there fucking loading guns with him, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I realized time slowed down. If we catch somebody with duck, we have to kill them. Like, this ain't talking about it anymore. That's my dude. You're not gonna catch my dude up. The last thing that man said to me was, Jay, are you good? Nobody was fucking with my dude. So here I am, just like accepting fate, like, yo, I'm gonna have to smoke a motherfucker, like for real, not for play. And look, there's way, way harder motherfuckers in the world out there. There are real fucking gangsters, motherfuckers that don't put up with shit. Okay. That's not who I am, but when I was tested, I had to do what I had to do. Because see, here's the thing. If we caught somebody with duck caught up and I didn't smoke them, that's a death sentence for me. That's not only the people around me saying, Jay ain't about that life. He ain't real. He ain't that thing he portrays himself as. He's not that guy. Fucking. So now I'm gonna get people coming at me just because they know I won't do that. Yeah, I got a gun, but he ain't gonna fucking use it. Like that dude Danny Boy, I knew he wasn't gonna use that shit. That's why I beat his ass. And you know what? Fuck, as I'm sitting here saying it, man, how many dudes are sitting in jail right now simply because if they didn't do that, it was a death sentence for them. Not because they made a fucking stupid ass decision and went and shot somebody, but because they found themselves in a position where if they didn't do it, it was a absolute death sentence for themselves. What a fucked up game. And I'd have done it. I'm here to tell you right now, I'd have fucking smoked anybody fucking anywhere near fucking Duck. I might have shot fucking innocent people if they were near him. That's where I was that day. That's who the fuck I was that day. I was murdering fucking everybody. I figure that shit out later. I had succumbed to the streets. I didn't give a fuck, dude. Fuck this. I'm going to jail. I don't give a shit, dude. Fucking. You know, there's a part of me that even as I'm processing this, there's a part of me that thought back to getting my ass beat by those cops and got left there. And it was like, man, that was a white car. What if that was a fucking an undercover? You know what I mean? Because see, here's the thing, man. Duck and I were a fucking problem together. When you have nothing to lose, what are you going to take? You ain't going to take nothing from me. What are you going to do? You're going to put me and Duck in jail? That's just going to increase my street cred, dude. Like, I don't want to go, but if that's where you're sending me, you're going to lose, dude. Because here's the thing, you guys. If Duck and I would have wound up in jail together, I wouldn't be telling this story. I'd probably be dead. But I would have tripled fucking down on where I was that day. There was no fucking turning back for me. This is who the fuck I was. All of these thoughts going through my head. You know, fucking Ronnie's next to me driving with his knee, loading fucking guns, fucking in oncoming traffic. But anyway, we get to Trop and Valley View. This dude gave no fucks, man. We stopped in the intersection and he fucking got out and started looking around and fucking he started scooping up shells from the other side of the street, whoop, 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 picking up everything he saw. And fucking he was like, no evidence. And fucking he was like, fucking, where is he? I said, I don't know. Let's go. We looked around for blood in case he got hit. I don't know. But he's like, we gotta go. Let's go look. And fucking, we get in the car and we head back the other way. And I'm like, I know he went this way, basically heading back west down Trop, but on the other side of the road, on the eastbound side. We started turning in to different apartment complexes and just driving around like, yo, maybe he's hiding between cars or hiding here or hiding there. And I couldn't call for him, right? Because the last thing I need is fucking somebody to be like, oh, they're looking for him. That's them. You know, like I didn't need that. So we had to drive around nonchalant with fucking laps full of guns looking for my boy. And we're looking for a white car. Okay. Is that it? Is that it? Is that it? Because don't forget, this whole time I'm fucking tweaked off meth. Is that it? How about that one? I don't know, man. I don't know. We gotta find Duck, dude. We gotta find him. But the siren started. We were at this one complex, and I got out of the car, and I don't know what I was like. Just let me look around real quick. Like maybe he's hiding behind. I don't know, dude. I was looking in the dumpster area, all that shit. But the siren started. We gotta go, dude. So we get back in the car. We go back to Ronnie's. Cindy, I believe, at this time was over at Pete and Mary's fucking apartment, hanging out with Mary. They were cool, and like there was air conditioning and shit, and like cool, like at least I know you're somewhere safe. And I called her up and explained what was going on, and I had damaged this girl so bad that she wasn't even surprised. She barely even would emote, because she couldn't show weakness to anybody, because that's the life we lived. Like the human side of us was just fucking gone. Because I had made it so high. I mean, and again, it's not as high as fucking it sounds, right? But I made it to a certain level where showing emotion could get you killed. And so she just took the story in, and it broke her heart, because where's Duck? I don't know. I can't find him. And the emotion starts kicking in, and I'm like kind of wanting to cry a little bit. Like, that was wild. Like, your emotions want to let loose. I had to suck that up, dude. Shut that shit down, dude. Don't be a bitch. Fucking shut that down. The last thing that man said to me is, "Jay, are you good?" That's the last time I saw Duck. You know, stories went around. We wound up kind of finding out what happened to him. Apparently, he had gone into some apartment complex. I don't know if he knew it was empty or not, but he busted into an empty apartment, and the cops found him in there. Fucking smoking dope. He's just fucking getting high. So, God damn it, dude. I don't know that they went there for him because of what happened on Trop. I think they might have gone in there because he had broken in. The way I understand it, he got arrested. I never heard if he got hit. I never heard that. I think what he wound up getting fucking clinked up for was breaking and entering and then possession. Because see, we never made it to pick up, so he didn't have extra. And these are the things that are running through my head. Like, he didn't have enough dope on him to get busted for distribution. He might have only had what was in the pipe. And sure as shit, man, I'm over here at fucking Ronnie's house. Like, oh fuck, let me call Juan. Yo, you want to give me a ride to go pick up? Like, fucking just shoot the etch a sketch. Like, I didn't take. Here's the thing: the fact that Ronnie ran in and got guns and we bounced out, I didn't have to question his loyalty. I knew he was fucking crazy. Okay. I knew this dude was off a little bit. Benny, on the other hand, that motherfucker was still sitting there waiting to get high, getting high off whatever it is that he had. So I knew what to make of that dude. But again, just like Hero, Duck never told me, "Yo, Jay, I got your back. I got you. I don't give a fuck. I won't let nothing happen to you. Dude, you know I got you. I don't give a fuck." He never said that shit. And like I said in the beginning, I had guys I grew up with, guys that knew me from before the dope game, that turned on me over bullshit. And I knew this dude for months. And his last words to me was checking on me before we split ways. That's why loyalty is non-negotiable. You know, I've had plenty of betrayal in my life, and I'm a bigger person now. And I'm still working through a lot of it. It's also why I keep my group very, very small. I've got my family, my friends, I've got my job, my business. Like, I just do me. 'Cause I also know what I'm capable of today. And it's very reassuring. It's very calming to know that I may not like the decision I make, but I'll make it. You know, I got more to lose now. I may handle things differently, but I know I'll handle it. You may wonder, fuck, does this have to do with recovery? Like, why are we here? Well, as scary as that story was and is, it's still not as scary as the day I realized that I was at war with myself constantly. In the intro, I even said, it's I made myself a beast because I didn't want to become a man, because I was scared. I felt I couldn't. Because how does an addict become a man, right? Well, because I couldn't do that, I turned myself into a beast. And it relieved me of the stress of needing to be a man. there's a lot of reward, a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety, but there's a lot of reward for being a quote unquote man. And I didn't feel like I was worthy of reward, not just because of this day, not because of any of these activities, but my inner self, Jason, maybe little Jason. We had been so emotionally beat down that we didn't feel that we deserved to be okay. And so this is who I became instead. It was a disassociation from myself. I created this monster. And I'm like real Jekyll and Hyde shit, y'all. But this was the thing that was created to protect the inner self. Because I just wanted to protect them. Just like my first instinct was to protect that woman and her kids when these guys started shooting, I didn't run for my life immediately. Duck didn't either. I mean, he got his foot ran over, but he could have got up and kept running, and instead he defended. But my first instinct was to protect this woman and her kids. Bitch, you gotta go. Fucking drive, woman, drive. Still not as scary as the day you realize that all of your PTSD and your trauma and anxiety and addiction and the whole thing, when you realize the only fucking person that you're against is yourself. Put it in a war scenario, okay? When you're at war, you're facing the enemy, presumably, right? The people that are next to you are with you, and they're not watching what you're doing. Okay, they're not paying attention to what you're going through. They're counting on you to do what the fuck you need to do, and they're going to do what the fuck they need to do to defend against that person or that entity across from them. The problem with that is the entity across from them is themselves. That war that I was fighting was against me, and that motherfucker knew everything I was going to do before I did it. They had the blueprint. It was a fucking losing battle that I kept fighting. Because my enemy knew every move I was going to make. Man, my heart's fucking racing. The reality and the acceptance of that nobody gives a fuck. Okay. I'm going to speak for myself by using we at the moment. Okay. But we in recovery and addiction, I've spoke to plenty of people that feel the same way. Like our shame keeps us feeling that people keep looking at us and thinking about us. When the reality is, when you're not in front of people, think of the most embarrassing thing you still run around with. Nobody gives a shit that you did that. You are thinking far too highly of yourself to think that fucking however long ago that event was, that they're still thinking about it. How arrogant is it of us to think that? But we mask it as fucking embarrassment. It's not embarrassment. That's your ego, right? That's you giving yourself a fucking reason to feel this way. That's either your anxiety telling you, hey, stay anxious. That's that devil on your shoulder. Hey, you want to get high? Remember that thing? Or it's just arrogance, thinking that you're that fucking important. Whatever it is, you got to let it go. You got to let it go, man. Because the people that are with you aren't looking at you. They're looking the same way you are. And anybody looking at you, they're probably against you. And you shouldn't give a fuck about them. Come on, when you're in war and the guys that are facing you and shooting at you, after you fucking kill them, are you gonna run around and go and apologize for shit? Fuck no. Fuck no. You take them out and you move on. Or when you're outnumbered and outgunned, you retreat and find another way around. You don't need those people. If you have people in your life that make you feel judged, if you have people in your life that aren't adding value, if you have people in your life that you fucking know aren't loyal like you are, if that's something you require of them and they can't give it to you, maybe you need to retreat and find another way around because they ain't for you. You know, the hardest thing we have to do sometimes is fucking just show up for ourselves. And sometimes that means cutting motherfuckers loose, man. If they're not adding value to your life, dude, you got to get rid of them because there's nothing fucking scarier. There's nothing scarier than going to war against yourself. Before we close, switching gears here a little bit, I wanted to take a moment and thank Bernadine Fox and her Rethreading Madness platform. She was kind enough to have me on for an hour-long conversation where we kind of got into a lot of the story that we're talking about here, but even deeper and further into the story that we haven't even gotten to yet. But it was on a syndicated platform. Like, it was played all over Canada and on different radio stations, and now it's posted on her podcast, Rethreading Madness, which is crazy. Hers is Rethreading Madness and mine's My Madness Method, so it meshed very well. But go check her out. All the other episodes she's done address so many aspects of mental health. I'd also like to thank the Mental Health Radio Network and the great work they're doing over there. It was exciting to have heard myself, but, you know, you guys listen to me all the time, so maybe that's just self-indulgent for me. Anyway, go check her out, Rethreading Madness. You know, again, I think my takeaway from this is, like, dude, my poor mama. You know, I'd always, oh, shut up, ma. Like, I'm here, man. I'm here to talk. I'm here to walk this walk with you, man. Like, reach out. We can chat. My Madness Method 819 at Gmail. My Madness Method on Instagram. Yo, hit me up. My name is Jason Farias. And this is My Madness Method.